Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today on the show, we have Pano K from Photogenic Supply. Hey Pano.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Yes, we're obviously super excited to finally have you on the show. You finally caved. We're very excited about that. For our listeners who may not know who you are and what you do, do you mind giving us a background on yourself and how you got into photography?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So my name is Pano. I grew up in Greece and I came to the U.S. to go to college back about 20 years ago. And I have always been a photographer or interested in photography. Like a lot of people, I got my first camera from my grandfather when I was a teenager, and I still have it and I still use it. and so that's kind of where I started. And then, I'm sure we'll get into this, but I currently run Photogenic Supply, which is a small studio that makes gifts and accessories and items for photographers.
What was the camera that your grandfather
gave? Yeah, we always like, anytime anybody says like, oh, I got a camera, we're like, wait.
Yeah, so it was, it is a Canon A1. Mom had been given an AE1, so I also had that growing up from my grandfather, but I focused on the A1, which I preferred. And basically, just all of kind of middle school and high school, I took a lot of film photos, took film classes. I would bring it along with me whenever I traveled, went on some trips during high school. And took some photos, and then in college, I kind of became even more into it. I took some photo classes. I eventually got to the point where I was pulling all-nighters in the darkroom. And so I was kind of like the guy who always has a camera with him because, for me, they're... You know, isn't really a point in traveling somewhere if you don't have a camera. And, you know, some people say, oh, that's kind of weird. Can't you just enjoy being there? And I'm like, yes, I greatly enjoy being there, but I can't enjoy it if the camera is not there,
right?
Too.
It's funny because I just got back from a trip and I had my three cameras that I brought and it was like, we're going to a wedding. And I was like, my husband's like, I don't think you need all those. It's going to be dark. I'm like, well, okay, I won't. I'll just bring the one. And then I was like, I'm just going to bring them all. And if I don't use them, then I'll not use them. But if I have them and like, you know, it's like if I don't have them and I want them, I'm going to be very upset.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a little bit like a cross between like a drug that we're all addicted to and a security blanket. You know, you kind of need to have it there. But I think it comes from a real place where we've all been somewhere where we didn't have it for some reason or the battery died or whatever it is. And we missed that shot and you kind of never forget the shots that you missed.
They literally, it will haunt you.
So
yes.
You just got to bring it with you to be happy.
And that's so true. I tell the story, I think, a million times on this show of the car that was pulled over that was like on fire. And I did not have my camera. Like, and even before then, I had my camera with me wherever I go all the time. And that was the one time I was like, I'm going to run down to the store real quick. I don't need it. And I even kind of doubled back to go get it. And I was like, come on, you know, this is a little much that you need to walk a half a mile back to your house to get your camera bag. And lo and behold, there they were. It was the perfect photograph.
Yeah. And I like that security blanket analogy. I'm going to use that more.
Yeah, that's great.
Because then people will understand it more, I think. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah.
Did you study photography in college?
No, I actually studied economics because I was...
Oh, very different.
Yeah. I was really interested in like how all that stuff works. I didn't know anything about it. My mother is a teacher and my father was an artist. So I didn't know a lot about economics and business and how all that stuff works. So I kind of wanted to learn more about that. But I ended up hating it actually. So yeah, it was a bad idea. I should have just done photography because I was taking photo classes all the time anyway. I should have just majored in that, but, you know, live and learn.
I feel like as a creative person, that makes perfect sense that economics wasn't your thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just, I kept taking photos in college. I worked, you know, like I mentioned, the darkroom a lot and printing. This was obviously back when digital was not widespread. And then I graduated college, started working in a finance company, actually, because, again, I thought that's what I was interested in. But I kept taking pictures all the time. It would be like I'd work 9 to 5. It wasn't really 9 to 5. It was like 8 to 7. But anyway, on the on the weekends, I would just go out and take pictures. I'd bike somewhere and take pictures. I'd travel, visit friends, take a bus. I was living in Boston at the time, so I'd take a bus down to New York and walk around and take pictures. And so it was really always about the photography, kind of always, you know, ever since that first 13-year-old getting a film camera, my life has always been about being passionate about photography. And I've traveled a little bit, been to like South America and Asia and Europe, and I always do it because of the photography. Like, you know, I want to see the things, but I want to photograph them is more important. So, and you know, Chris, you were talking about bring the 3 cameras. I mean, I usually bring 3 cameras with me nowadays. But when I was, at one point I was in China for a few months, I was doing a study abroad, and this was probably pretty dumb, but I like literally had a full DSLR with like multiple L lenses and like batteries and backup batteries and like external hard drives. And I was like carrying that around with me all over China, like on overnight trains, because I was obsessed. And everyone who was with me was like, what are you doing? That's like, you know, 25 pounds of gear. And I was like, yeah, well, that's why I'm here. So yeah, I do shoot both film and digital. The way I describe it is like the first 10, 15 years, I only shot film. Then I went over to digital in about 2006, 2007, I started shooting exclusively digital, because by that point, I remember being in Boston and trying to get film developed, and they would tell me stuff like, okay, we got to ship it to New York and we'll have it back in like a month and a half. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is crazy. So I just switched to full digital, and then kind of shot only digital for about 10 years. And then the past 6 or 7 years, I've basically done both. And even started doing about 5 years ago, started doing like instant. I have like an Instax wide obsession too. So when I say I bring 3 cameras, I'm usually bringing like my Canon 5D Mark II, 2008 technology, rock on. And I have my Canon A1 35mm film, and then I bring like my Lomo instant wide as well. So it's a little bit much to be juggling all 3 cameras all the time, but it's also, what's really interesting is you definitely get very different photos with each one. So, come back from like, say a family trip, and you're like showing people the photos, and they're like, whoa, the instant photos are just very different than the digital, than the film. And you're like, yeah, I know. That's why I bring all three.
Yeah.
I always love, I have to have like an Instax or a Polaroid. It's mostly my SX70. I usually have that in my book bag because it's a really easy one to kind of squeeze in a little nook of my camera bag. But I think it's really important, especially when you're shooting around or people that don't really know that technology, that didn't grow up in that era of, you know, Polaroids were kind of like a thing of our generation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was always Christmas or a birthday party. Like there was always Polaroids there. And to have that to show people who, and old people love when you pull out an instant camera, like older people, I shouldn't say old people, but they're just like, I remember those, you know, it's one of those things.
I feel like the older people are always surprised that they're still around. They're like, I thought that died long ago. And you're like, no, we're still here.
It's a testament to film though. Like how long, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it hasn't been around that long, but like in our generations, you know, film has always kind of been there. I feel like it has, at least in my lifetime.
I love hearing people's like, we learned on film and then the digital wave came, and then now we're all going back to it. There's a lot of younger people who are getting into this just shooting film or just shooting digital, seeing like if they find their way to the other medium, you know, like what that journey is like. Be interesting.
Yeah. I I think, I mean, obviously there's like been infinite things said and written about, you know, film versus digital and all that stuff. And I don't really want to spark a flame war of any kind. I will just say that, you know, the simple fact that I think abundance is not always the path towards a higher quality. And so right. as someone who shot only film and then shot only digital and then went back to shooting both, I can say that I definitely shoot differently when I'm shooting film. And whether it's the quality of the grain or the tones or whatever it is, I do tend to love my film photos more. And that I think
for sure.
it's great to see a new generation discover that passion of like going out there and trying to make a incredible, you know, every one of the 36 frames be great, which of course is impossible, but you still try. And also, I mean, I have to mention, I've been a photography educator and also run like some photo walks and stuff, but I've been teaching like photo one-on-one lessons for about 8 years now. And it's really interesting how a lot of newbies, quote unquote, you know, to get a digital camera or whatever, and they think that, oh, now I have this camera, I can take a million pictures and they're high megapixels mm-hmm. and all that. And it's really yeah. interesting to watch them discover that, like, that's not going to help them take better pictures. The right. only thing that's going to help them take better pictures is putting in the time to learn how to take better pictures.
100%.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think there is definitely kind of a tension between modern technology and what the companies that make cameras have sold and need to sell to, you know, stay in business, and what, as an artist, what it takes to improve your own art for yourself. You know, I think just Man. Like infinite repetition of something that's kind of quick and easy, it doesn't necessarily get you better photos.
No. Or spraying and praying.
Yeah, that's yeah. like the worst possible approach to photography.
Right.
Don't spray and pray ever.
I was super guilty of it. And I feel like anytime I grab a digital camera, I'm super guilty of it. Like, it gives you that okay in your mind when you shoot a digital camera that you can take three of the same for no reason. You know, it's like, yeah. pop, pop, pop. Okay, I know I got it in one of those, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, yeah.
I remember spraying and praying when I really didn't know what I was doing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like I was really praying more than spraying. But now I think shooting film kind of like, I mean, it depends on the situation, what I'm shooting. But if I'm, you know, doing like portraits or something, I know I don't need to take 100. Like, I can really like slow down and be intentional about my images. And I think that a lot of it is because I'm used to having to do that with film. So I think that's kind of a reward of being a film photographer.
Yeah, that's yeah. actually what I was, you know, about to say, is that weirdly, when I started shooting film again 6 or 7 years ago, I started taking fewer digital photos, even when I was only using my digital yep. camera. And so I think it actually affects the way you think about the way you approach photography for the better, in my opinion. But I also just want to say, like, you know, as someone who has like led various photo groups and done a lot of photo lessons for people, I mean, I want to be clear, like, I'm not elitist about anything. Like, there are many different types of photography. There are many different approaches to photography. And obviously we're on the Analog Talk podcast, so we're going to focus on film, but there's nothing wrong with pursuing photography in whatever way you want to pursue it. I think that's always been a guiding principle for me. Is
Absolutely.
Some people literally just walk around with their phones and that's their only camera, and yep. that's fine. As long as you're passionate yep. about it and you're investing time and energy into getting better at it, you know, it doesn't matter. There's no like exclusivity, and everyone has their own preferences. You know, I'll also say that, you know, for those who shoot only film, or sorry, only digital, you know, there's something to be said for the benefits of technology. For example, you know, sports photos, if you're a professional, like insane. Football photographer or baseball photographer, back in the days when it was only film, I mean, that was brutal. You were like blowing through tons and tons of film hoping to catch that one shot. And now with 10 frames per second or 15 frames per second or whatever, you can do your job much better and much more efficiently.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's absolutely applications and instances where, you know, digital just, there's no other way to do it. So I just wanted to say, like, for me, photography is whatever you're passionate about. There's no such thing as the one is better than the other. There's different things for different strokes for different folks.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a tool. I mean, it's a tool. Yeah.
Yep. So Pano, how did Photogenic Supply come to be?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I, in 2015, I was running a DSLR lens rental service. So I was renting lenses for people who have interchangeable lenses. And I went to a show called Photo Plus Expo, which many of you might be familiar, many of your listeners might be familiar. It's in New York City typically every year, and it's, I think, the largest photo show in the world or in the Western Hemisphere. It's very large. It's like 30,000 people, 3 days. And I had a booth there for my lens rental business, and I had printed a couple shirts that my friend had made, like designed for me. And like over the course of 3 days, I talked to like several hundred people, and like no one cared about the equipment rental, and everyone was asking about the t-shirts. So I was like, okay.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
You know, I paid a bunch of money to have this booth and no one cares about what I'm doing, but they were really interested in the t-shirts. So, that's actually where the idea came from. So that was 2015. So basically that fall, the next couple months after that show, because it's usually in October, I was like, you know what, there's something here. What if I come up with some t-shirt designs and focus a lot on like a kind of a well thought out, clever, high quality design and on a nice high quality garment and kind of do it right, if you will. And so basically worked on that with my friend who had designed the original batch. His name is Alex, and we've worked together ever since. We came up with the first 10 designs. I put together a website, and we launched in, I think it was July 1st, 2016. And the name was Tog Tees, which some people might have heard of. So we were called Tog Tees for the first 5 years. And then honestly, it was a name that I had just kind of picked because it was quick, easy to remember, available URL, and so on. And then over time, I just came to really dislike it because from the very first 6 months, we were doing more than t-shirts. We had gotten into hoodies and hats and some other stuff.
Right.
And so for a long time, it was, in my mind, like not applicable, but it was still easy and memorable. And a lot of the people that, you know, were buying from us knew the name. So I was hesitant to change it. But then last year, we completely renamed to Photogenic Supply. There's actually a whole long blog post on our website about why that name was chosen and what it means. The short version is that the word photogenic itself is a very interesting word. It comes from the Greek, photogenes, but it did not exist in Greek. So there's a name for words that get borrowed from other languages where they didn't exist. Anyway, it was originally a French word. Photogenique, which came from photogenes, and anyway, and it's a whole long thing.
Wow,
you can read all about it.
Wow.
It's on the blog post. But the idea is that photogenic means created or creating light. Photo is force is light, and genic is like generator. So the idea was that our designs are inspired by photography, and photography is created by light, and so we're both inspired by photography and inspiring the creation of things. And so that's kind of where the name came from. And yeah, we changed the name last year, and I'm happy to talk about all the various different things we do.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get into it because I feel like you guys do a lot. And I think for someone who, like, you know, loves this community, seeing a store just for photographers, that's all stuff that we all nerd out about, you know, like you can get a coaster as a shutter and you can get a film in a glass, like it's just the best. You know,
yeah,
is a lot of that stuff your brainchild, or does Alex help you with like, hey, I got an idea, like what's the creative process aside from like working with somebody like us where we say we have this desert island question that we talk about and like, can you make a shirt out of it? Like, what about the rest of it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Alex and I have been working together since before Tog Tees. So it's probably been about 6 or 7 years now. So we work really well together in the sense that he understands when I come to him with an idea about something, and also like he knows what kind of ideas I'm looking for. So he brings his own ideas to the table. So the short answer is we design everything in-house between the two of us. So any product that you see, we came up with. We work with various local and US-based manufacturers to make the product. So like our screen printers are here in Philadelphia, and they have been since the beginning. So we've printed, you know, thousands and thousands of shirts with them. Our hats and embroidered hoodies, like the one that Chris has. She's wearing it right now. Those are all embroidered here in Philadelphia. And then, you know, most of the stuff we make is either done here locally or somewhere else in the USA. And that was a deliberate decision from the beginning, actually, for kind of a weird reason. So my mom was like a scientist. She was a science teacher, but she studied like botany and biology. So I was always kind of like,
awesome.
I was always kind of like a tree hugger from a young age.
And so, had to be.
You know, my philosophy was kind of like, if you could make something somewhere nearby and not ship it across the ocean, if you don't have to, then that's better. And so that's kind of the root for that. And then of course, with the recent like global supply chain issues, it's actually turned out to be a great thing because we don't make anything in overseas right now. And so that's good for us because we don't have to wait for things to arrive, which is great. Although, of course, it's a global supply chain shortage. So there's, you know, raw material shortages and all sorts of other shortages that are affecting us. But yeah, so the short answer is we design everything, we come up with everything, and we when we're working with like a partner, like with the shirts we did for Analog Talk for you guys, we have a process where we've done a bunch of those at this point, and so we know how to kind of make it a process that will be successful. We come with some specific kind of outline of the process and how it's going to work, and we give the partner like some things to think about and to come to us with before we talk, and so we know how to come up with some cool ideas and make something interesting and unique and high quality by focusing on what we've done so far, which is doing that, coming up with unique designs and making sure that they're done right. And I think you guys saw during the process, like, you know, there were a couple times when maybe you said, hey, we want to do this, and I told you why we, you know, shouldn't do that because it might not come out the way you think, and then it wouldn't be as high quality as, you know, we want or whatever. So
that's kind of like when anybody does anything, it's important to be careful about like overpromising. Like you could be like, oh yeah, sure, and then it comes out and nobody likes it, or you've done this for a while, so you know what works. So we were taking everything you said as like you know what you're doing. We're just here to like go along for the ride. So, but I think that is important to like I said, when you're doing anything, to do it right.
Yeah, and if I can, I'll just talk a little bit about like how we come up with new products and how we work on new ideas. I mean, the guiding principle is always, number one, can we make it be high quality? And so, you know, there's a million things out there we could do super cheaply and easily, but that doesn't mean that we want to do them. So the first question is, can we make a really high quality version of whatever it is we're trying to do? And then the second question is like, will it be authentic? Will it be legitimate? We, at this point, have created over 50 different t-shirt designs. And, you know, there's a lot of really cheap t-shirts available all over the internet that are about all sorts of things, photography, cameras, dogs, pets, whatever you want it to be about. And what you'll notice, you know, if you kind of dig in a little bit, you'll notice that all of our designs are kind of have a lot of thought put into them. And there's attention to detail. And, you know, someone who knows about photography or who's really familiar with film photography and stuff like that might notice that by looking at the designs. But on the surface, maybe, you know, to someone who doesn't know, they look at some of our shirts and then they look at some shirts on Amazon or whatever, and they're like, okay, you know, what's the difference? But I think for the people that have ordered from us, which is lots of people at this point, they appreciate that. And that's why they keep coming back and ordering more. And so,
You guys have a definite style though. Like when I see your t-shirts, they are very cohesive. Like it's like there's a, you know, it was great because when we were talking about us working with you when we did our partnership with the shirts, it was like we couldn't wait. We were super excited because we loved how the Restore from Backup stuff came out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just me doing research on the company before we had our meeting and all that stuff, I was like, oh yeah, this is totally like what we're into, you know. And it's just cool. I like that you have a, like, I don't want to call it like a theme or something
or
like
aesthetic.
That. There's just like a,
I think, part of the problem here is that I'm like a unconfessed artist at heart. That's part of the problem. So, you know, I think every artist has their direction and their style and their theme and whatnot. Yeah. And we definitely have ours. And there's no you know, I'm not saying it's the only way to do things or it's the best one or anything like that. I would probably characterize our style as sort of like clean and minimalist, maybe.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's for a number of reasons. I mean, one is that I personally prefer that style, and Alex does as well. But the other reason is that it is easier to make sure that your end product is of higher quality if you don't throw in a bunch of things that can mess you up along the way. So, you know, people think that t-shirt printing is pretty simple, and it is. I mean, it's been done for a long time, but there's also a lot of ways to mess it up. So, sure. For example, if you have a 5 or 6 color design, it's really easy to print one of those colors wrong and ruin the design. So, like, if you imagine, let's just say that there was a design that had 6 colors in it, and 3 of those colors were a flag, you know, the Irish flag, the French flag, the American flag, whatever flag has 3 colors, and one of them's a little bit off, it's going to look kind of silly, right? And so the minimalism also comes from a place where we can, at this point, that we can guarantee a really high quality print that will last for years and years, that will be done right. It won't be crooked. It won't be smudged. It won't be the wrong color, you know, all these things. And so I tend to think of everything very holistically, like, you know, it has to be high quality, again, is the starting point for everything. So we could try a wildly different style where maybe it's like hand illustrated or there's a lot of different colors or whatnot, but I can't guarantee that that will be the quality that people expect from us.
Yeah.
So there's multiple reasons, but those are a couple of the reasons why our designs tend to look the way they do.
Love it.
It's great. Is photogenic supply the only thing that you do for work?
That's a good question. It currently is. Before the pandemic, I was doing a couple different things. I was doing some photo work kind of here and there, paid photo work for various clients. And then I was also actually doing consulting for small businesses. So I have a background in kind of like analyzing businesses and looking at numbers and also looking at the marketing and all these other things. And so I was doing some of that as well. And then, of course, the pandemic hit and everything kind of changed completely. I actually decided to focus 100% of my time on this. So actually, since then, I've been doing photogenic supply for the full time.
Yeah,
that's awesome, man.
That must feel nice.
Yeah, it's great. And it also, like, was able to do a lot more when I focused on it full time rather than doing it part time.
I couldn't imagine doing so. I need something like that in my, I think, I hate saying creatives or just people like us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That just
like
thrive
us.
On art and creating and doing all that stuff. It's definitely a dream, I'm sure, for more than just me to run a business doing something that you love. I mean, do you have any advice in chasing that kind of dream for people that are kind of scared to take off in that direction?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to pretend to like be the, you know, guru of the world who knows everything. I think everyone's got their own situation and their own history and their own things they've tried and things they want to try. I would just say my only piece of advice would be, my approach is whatever you're going to do, do it 100%. And so I found through trial and error that if you try to do too many different things at the same time, you end up doing none of them very well.
Yep.
And
yep.
So really, if you can bring yourself to focus and spend the time and energy on one thing exclusively for a certain amount of time, then you can get a lot further than you would otherwise. And this doesn't mean, like, I think a lot of people are kind of asking themselves, should I quit my job to do this thing or whatever? And I don't think that's really the question. I think what you should be doing, which is what I should have done when I was younger, is, you know, keep whatever job you need to pay the bills and then spend 100% of your free time that you want to spend on this other project and see how far you can get and see what you can do. And a lot of times it takes a really long time to get something off the ground. I mean, that's just how it works, right? I think we all have visions in our head of, you know, you're going to do something and it's going to take off overnight and then you're going to be famous and happy. But like, that's not never how it works, right? I mean, so if you can keep yourself alive and pay the bills doing something that you can do, while at the same time spending your free time on some creative project that makes you happy, I think that's the best of both worlds. And then if you get to the point in your artistic or creative journey where you can dedicate 100% of your time to it, that's wonderful, right? Like, that means that you've gotten somewhere yeah. where you've honed your craft and you're proud of what you're doing and happy with it. And you know, it's at the level where you should charge what you can charge. You know, this is a whole different topic, right? Like, what should you charge for your work and all that stuff? I'm not diving into that. I'm just saying a lot of us and no one's like ever done their journey, right? Like, you keep learning and growing forever. But a lot of us know, like, photographers do say this all the time. Like, I look back at the pictures I took 10 years ago and I'm like, look, what is that garbage, right? Like, right? And so the plus side of that, of course, is that now you're at a point where you realize that you're much better than you were. And therefore, you know, your time and energy and creative energy is worth more than it was. And I think everyone goes through that. Every creative person goes through that process. So I guess what I'm saying is find a way to pay the bills until you get to the place where you can do creative stuff 100% of the time and still pay the bills.
Yeah, that's that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That's the funny part is people think that it's like, I'm going to quit everything and my little beanie knitting business is going to support my family. But, you know,
it's not how it works, unfortunately.
It
takes work. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you still doing, you said you were doing like teaching, like educating.
Yeah. So before the pandemic, I would do one-on-one lessons for whatever digital cameras, mirrorless. Some people came with their phones. Some older clients would come and say, hey, I just got a new phone. I want to know how to take bigger pictures with it. You know, some film people starting out with 35 millimeter SLRs and whatnot. So I was doing that. Then, of course, pandemic hits and no one wants to be within 10 feet of you. So it's kind of hard to do the one-on-one lessons. But I still do monthly photo walks. So back in January 2014, I think, was the first one. I started a club called the Fairmount Photo Club here in Philadelphia because I was living in Fairmount at the time, which is a neighborhood in Philadelphia. And every single month for the past 6.5 years, except for one of them got canceled one time, we've had a monthly photo walk where people meet up and we walk around and take pictures, and I kind of do little sort of mini lessons and mini tutorials, different stops along the way. And so at this point, I've done hundreds of them, and it's pretty cool because there's like a core group that has been coming for years and years, and then there's always you know, new people that come and discover it. And it's kind of, I mean, the focus is very much like a fun, casual way to walk around, meet other photographers, take some interesting pictures, discover new neighborhoods of Philadelphia, and, you know, get some tips and tricks from other people. And we have all sorts of, I mean, we have people who literally, you know, bring their phone because that's all they have, and they're kind of just getting into being more serious with taking better pictures on their phone. And then we have retired professional photographers who are like, you know, I shot for whoever for 30 years and now I'm done and I'm just hanging out and having fun. And so we have all sorts of different levels, and it's really just, it's definitely helped me realize that like photography can be a lot about the community as well as about the craft itself. And so, yeah, we've been doing photo walks for 7 years now, and we're still going strong every month. We have a walk in a different part of the city. The one great thing about Philadelphia is that it's like basically a city of small walkable neighborhoods. And so you can pick any one of the, whatever it is, 15, 20 different neighborhoods. And we rotate through them, and we try to find new ones too. But it's fantastic because you can get all sorts of different photos just in one place, which is nice.
Yeah.
That's inspiring because I really need to – I want to do something like that here because the more and more I run into people, I'm finding out that they shoot, you know, not necessarily film, but I would love to have a little community, especially around here because it's – I'm on the outskirts. I'm about an hour and a half away from you. And it's pretty lonely out in these parts. I miss being close to a city.
Yeah, well, two things. First of all, you're always welcome to join us on a photo walk. So if you're ever in Philly, you should do it. And then the second thing I want to tell you is the very first photo walk I led back in January 2014, there was about four people that came. And as I like to tell people, none of them came back to the second one. but I kept doing them. I kept doing them. And every month there was new people. And, you know, at some point, the group, it's on Meetup. And the Meetup group had reached like 1,200 members, which was kind of nuts. Yeah. So I had seen like a lot of people over those years. But then I converted it to like a membership group because I wanted people to be kind of a little more committed. A lot of those members had come by once or twice and then they had moved away from Philly, but they were still members, you know. And so now it's about 80 or 90 people or so who are, you know, committed monthly members who show up pretty frequently. So I would advise you that, you know, start a photo group, a photo walk, whatever it is, but just know that you probably have to do it for a little while before you, find your people.
Makes sense. Do you ever get back in the dark room anymore, or is that something of the past?
Sadly, I haven't been in the dark room in a while. Here in Philly, there's like maybe two small community dark rooms.
Oh, cool.
And actually one of them opened recently, so there's really not that much available. In terms of developing in my own house, I have little kids and a very small house. And those two things and chemicals are not compatible. So unfortunately, I just don't have the room or the kind of safety precautions in place to make sure a two-year-old doesn't drink any developer.
Don't scare me.
So I haven't been able to be in a dark room in a few years, but I definitely miss it. And this is cliche, but there is absolutely something magical about being in a dark room and seeing the image, you know, appear on the paper. And it's something that everyone should experience at some point in their life if they haven't.
Definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely hoping to someday get back into one.
Yeah, I was just curious. I didn't know if you still dabbled.
Yeah, what I do is I shoot a lot of film these days, and I have a local lab called Photo Lounge that I've worked with for a number of years, and they do a really good job. They actually are the only lab that has survived in Philadelphia during kind of like the death of film. They've been open for about 20 years now and they're still processing film. And so I get all my film processed there. And I was scanning it myself on like a flatbed scanner. And I did that for a couple weeks before I wanted to shoot everyone around me.
It's tough.
And I almost threw it out the window because I was so frustrated with how slow it is. But I'm actually planning to start scanning my own negatives with like a sort of like a negative supply type setup.
It seems to be the way these days.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't tried every possible option, but I remember when people were using, you know, Pacon scanners and they were going for $1,200 or something. Jeez. It's like, doesn't even do that great of a job. And it's like, I don't know. We definitely needed a better solution. And so it's great to see that there's people out there and companies out there that are coming up with new modern solutions, because it's a huge problem. Yeah. I mean, I have probably a couple hundred rolls that I want to scan that I'm definitely not going to do on a flatbed scanner ever.
Yeah.
No matter how much free time I have, I will not sit on the flatbed scanner. And so I'm actually really excited about more efficient and higher quality ways of doing that stuff. So
awesome.
I'm curious as to what, if the labs are going to be upping their prices now that the price of film's going up again. I wonder, does that happen? I've never used a lab, so I have no idea. Like, do lab prices go up when film goes up or no?
I don't know, because, you know, I haven't run a lab myself, but I know that, you know, the film prices is one thing, but then the chemistry is a lot of what they have to deal with. And so I think there's been issues from what I hear from my friends in the business. Like, there's been just widespread unavailability of all sorts of things that's causing issues. And so, you know, can they up their prices? Are they going to? I don't know. I mean, obviously, at some point, you're not going to pay like $25 a roll to have something developed. So I don't know what they're going to do. The upcoming, you know, Kodak, is going to raise their prices by whatever, 20% or something in January.
15 or 20%.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, on the one hand, I can understand if there, like, there has been a shortage and people haven't been able to get film, and so obviously something has to give. On the other hand,
yep.
you make it too expensive, and at some point people give up and say, this is crazy. I can't be paying, you know, $12 for a roll of film, just for the roll of film consistently every time. Yeah. It has to be. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I just know that there's a lot more demand. There's a lot less supply. And unfortunately, we're all dealing with the repercussions of that. And I don't know if it's going to abate. I mean, I don't see why film would get less popular next year.
So
that's kind of scary, because you're like, okay, the price is going up, but then there's still demand. So then what happens next, right? Like,
right.
I'm hoping that, you know, a lot of the film is made around the world and in different factories and whatnot, and the chemicals that are needed for it are made all over the world. So I'm hoping that in 2022, things normalize a little bit and there's greater availability of whatever it is that Kodak needs to make film so that they don't have to charge more for it.
Right.
The thing that got me, though, I don't know if you guys read the article, the Silver Grain Classics article the whole situation.
That was a good article.
The thing that got me was that, you know, when the digital thing was going so hardcore, they were selling film at bottom of the barrel prices, and we got used to buying it at such cheap prices because they weren't making any returns on it. They were just selling it to get some money in the door. And I see that working for a small business. I see how we do that. Like, our rental system is just a way to get instruments out the door and a little bit of money coming in, and it's basically a loss. And I feel bad because I haven't been getting angry about it. It seems like there's a lot of fueled flames online, and I'm not touching that conversation just because, like I said to Chris the other day, if a roll of 35 millimeter film was $100, I would still buy it. I bought Polaroid film. I spent some crazy money on some stuff that you can't get your hands on anymore because I love it that much. You know what I mean? It's Chris, you've said it. It's like putting gas in your car.
Yeah.
It's like buying a loaf of bread. You know what I mean? It's something that I always need to have. So it just, I don't know. It scares me, though, because I don't want people to get their pitchforks and torches out and try to go after these companies that are just trying to be companies. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, there's so much uncertainty in the world in a lot of different industries about what's happening right now, what's going to happen, where are things going to, quote, normalize. And I don't think anyone knows, right? It's impossible to know.
I think it's impossible.
All we can hope for is that the price increases lead to sustained capacity investments, right? Like, hopefully Kodak takes the money that they're making from the extra film and builds a bigger factory or adds another line or whatever it is they need to do, so that there's more film available, you know, a year from now rather than less. Making film is really hard, as anyone who's read about it knows. And so I hope that these companies keep investing in that rather than not, because then we'll end up in a worse situation. I mean, keep in mind, film did almost die, right? At some point, they were losing so much money on it that many companies, I mean, ever heard of Agfa? You know, they're not around anymore. And so we're lucky to have what we have. And I think it makes sense for people to be upset, but we also want, I mean, ultimately what we all want is a healthy ecosystem where there's manufacturers making stuff and people buying it and using it, and everyone can do what they want to do.
And we also have to remember that Kodak has brought back film stocks that were discontinued. Fujifilm is just, you know, killing them off left and right, and obviously doesn't care. So
that's sad.
I try to remember those things. Like, you know, they brought back two stocks they had to get rid of, you know? So it's like, there's a balance, and there's things that are out of their control that we don't know about and all this stuff. And it's easy to get mad at a big corporation, but it's like I've said, I have to get gas. I have to get film. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what do you have? Is there anything in the pipeline you want to talk about, Pano? Is there any stuff to be excited about for
absolutely. So
for the future?
Yeah. So just for those who have been following us for a little while and kind of wonder why we always end up launching everything at the end of the year, the answer is because we're trying to design stuff and make things throughout the year, and we launch things here and there. But especially this year, everything just ended up being so delayed. I mean, even our local embroiderers and printers and whatever were backed up with stuff and ended up you know, delaying the delivery of a lot of things. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that this year things ended up taking even longer than they normally would. And so we have a lot of product launches in the next couple months before the holidays because of that. Yeah. So, I mean, I can show you one of them. I know that, you know, listeners won't be able to see it, but we're coming out with a coloring book, which
is such a good idea,
which sounds weird, but basically, and it's hard to show you, but it's 30 different, like, individual illustrations about photography. Some of them are from our t-shirt designs, and some of them are new ones that we've made. But it's like, it's an adult coloring book, and what that means is it, the content is not adult content. It means it's for adults. So it's a little more refined and a little more kind of meant to help you relax. There's like a
kind
of a stress category
relief.
Zen coloring books. Exactly. And so.
Yeah. And she was like, I have an adult coloring book. I was like, excuse me?
Yeah, exactly. I realize it's not a good name
for it.
She's like,
it helps you relax. I'm like, what does? What are you talking about?
But so we're coming out with that soon. We're actually now with a local printer. And
man, that's exciting. Fun. I need one of those.
Yeah.
I'll have to send you guys one. I'm kind of excited about it. It's pretty cool. I mean, every illustration, there's 30 different illustrations that we made, and each one has kind of like a little story about it and how we came up with it and what it refers to. Because this spans like the past 6 years of coming up with designs. And so we've done a bunch of different collaborations with different people and kind of gives the background of where they came from. So it's kind of interesting. And, you know, like most things we wanted to, like everything we make, we wanted it to be high quality. So we spend a lot of time picking out cover stocks and talking to the printer about what ink is going to work on this cover stock and what weight paper to use on the inside so that it's perfect for coloring and doesn't bleed through and all these different things. So I'm excited about it. It's almost ready. It's been like several months in the making. But that's one thing I can tell you about. And then there's a bunch of other things that we're also going to be launching, some of which we already have ready. And frankly, I just need to take pictures of them and put them on the website. And then a few things that are like being produced right now that I'm hoping will come in soon. But that's another point I just wanted to make. So if you go to the website, you know, photogenicsupply.com, all the pictures you see on there are pictures that I've taken myself. So I feel like most people don't necessarily realize that because most websites aren't all photographed by one person. But so we design everything, you know, we test it, we prototype it, we make it, and then we photograph it and do everything. So I think people who have ordered from us, you know that because everyone gets a handwritten little note in their box saying thanks for ordering. And so anyway, that's just a, so as soon as I have time to photograph some of these new things that we have, we'll be putting those out there as well. But there are several new things coming out in the next like 2 months.
Man, that's exciting. Congrats.
Yeah. And actually it's probably a good time to mention the coupon code. So I have a special coupon code for you guys and your listeners. So if you just go to the website and put in Analog Talk at the checkout, just one word, Analog Talk, you'll get 20% off your first order. A little way of saying thank you guys for, you know, collaborating with us on the t-shirts we made earlier this year. And then also thanks to all the listeners for listening in and, you know, give us a try. And I'm pretty sure you won't be disappointed because 99.8% of people are not disappointed with us. So.
No. We've talked about how comfortable the shirts are, and I'm wearing the new crew neck, which is like such a high quality sweatshirt. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be this
heavy duty.
Heavy, dude. It's like, this is going to be my sweatshirt for the whole winter. Like, just you must see me in it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's our philosophy is always, I mean, ideally, everyone that opens a box from us around the world, wherever they are, they're surprised by how nice it is. That's kind of the goal always. And it seems to be working because at this point we've shipped out several thousand shirts around the world. The last count, I think we had shipped to 38 countries, which is pretty cool. I actually have a fun story. So a couple years ago, we got an order from Reunion Island, and I didn't know where that was. I had to look it up. It's like a tiny island. I think it's like a former or maybe even current French territory somewhere in the South Pacific, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, there's T-shirts and hats and and all sorts of stuff we've made all over the world, even in places that I don't know where they are.
Now that's a good feeling. I know that feeling.
Yeah.
That's what every time I look at our like analytics on our thing and seeing the countries where our episodes have been downloaded just blows my mind. I'm like, Iraq? Really? Yeah. Come on.
That's cool.
That's amazing.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
We'll be right back with the listener question for Pano right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk comes from Polaroid. Use the promo code ANALOGTALK10 on your first purchase on film at Polaroid.com.
Just wanted to pop in quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. We've done a bunch already. They're a ton of fun. We develop some film. We talk shop. We laugh. Tips and tricks. Hanging out. It's a lot of fun. Like I said, we've done a bunch already. Patreon is the best way to help support the show. Sounds like something you're interested in? Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Ben from In an Instant. Love you, buddy. And he wanted to know, are there any genius designs you've thought of but avoided due to copyrights? I love this question.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. So Ben is great. I've actually messaged with him on Instagram and had sent him an on-launch design to give feedback on. So I kind of wonder if he's...
Love it.
But the short answer is, from the beginning, we were very clear in our approach that we wanted all our designs to be as original as possible. And so... it's easy to take a brand name and change the colors or change the font or whatever and kind of play around with that stuff. And we never did that. We always stayed away from that, partially because we wanted to, avoid any potential problems, but also because we wanted to be known for our own thing rather than for kind of variations of someone else's thing. And so I guess the short answer is no. There haven't been any designs where we said, we could do that, but we'd have a problem with, whoever, because we don't even start like that. We start completely from scratch always.
Right.
And try to come up with a way to create a visual representation of a concept from scratch.
That's good. Because, originality is king when it comes to stuff like that.
Plus, I think that's like what we talked about, like attributes to why everybody loves your stuff. It's because it's original.
Yeah.
Great question, Ben.
Yeah, good answer, too. Good answer. All right. Now, I'm sure you know about this segment of the show. It is our... We kind of did a t-shirt design around around this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. I'm glad we get to ask you this after all the stuff we've been through together. All right. So it is the desert island camera, the one you can't live without. It's your ride or die. What is it going to be and why?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be the obvious choice, which is the camera that's been by my side for the past 25 years, which is my grandfather's Canon A1.
Nice.
I mean, there's obvious sentimental reasons for that. My grandfather's no longer around, and it's a connection I have with him. But also, it's like the film camera I'm most comfortable with after so many years of using it and shooting on it. I love it, and I am very happy with the photos I get from it. That would have to be it.
It's such a good camera, too.
Yeah, that's you had that, right?
Yeah, well, it was one that I ended up, I think I gave it to somebody as like a welcome to film photography. It was a gift that I gifted out to somebody that I hope they're still shooting. I don't care if they got rid of it or whatever, but I just hope that they, because they were really interested, asked me a ton of questions, and I was just like, here you go. Like, take this and do something with it. Because I have 400 cameras and I don't know what to do with them.
Yeah.
But great answer. I love that. I wish I had one of those. Every time I hear the, my mom's or my grandfather's or my, I wish I had one of those because we just didn't have cameras when I was, we did, but they were always like, the junky little click, 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 snap, just nothing that was going to last the test of time, like a beefy Canon A1. All right. So part two, the white whale. Is there anything that you've always wanted and you didn't have, or you had and you kind of let it go, or what camera are you lusting after?
Yeah, I first wanted to start shooting medium format back in college, like 20 years ago, And I never did it because I was really broke at the time. And
what a broke college.
Yeah, broke,
student.
Broke yeah, freshman yeah. in college. Gee, surprise, surprise. And it was like, I forget what it was. It was like, I don't know, $300 or something to get into medium format mm-hmm. photography. And I was like, yeah, I cannot afford that. And yeah, so I've kind of wanted to get into medium format for like 20 years and never actually been able to do it. So I think for me, it would probably be like a RB67 would be the white Ooh. Whale camera. It's I hear a lot of great things about it. I've kind of held a couple with my hands and I really like them. Of course, now they're a lot more than $300. so it's still kind of unaffordable for me, but someday I hope to get one and be able to use it. And, you know, for me, it would be the kind of thing where I would get one and then I would have it for the rest of my life.
I swear I'm getting buried with mine. The whole kit, like both backs, the lenses I have, it's all going in the box with me.
Yeah.
It's a great camera.
Great answers.
Yeah.
Great answers.
Yep.
Pano, this has been wonderful. Finally getting, like I said, getting you to chat with us. Where can everybody check out you and Photogenic Supply?
Yeah, sure. So I don't really post that much online anymore because I've been focusing the past couple of years 100% on the business. So I would just say all of my creative energy and time goes into Photogenic Supply, which is at photogenicsupply.com and also on Instagram at photogenic_supply. And we also have a TikTok recently. That's
Ooh,
been
cool.
kind of interesting. So yeah, I would say the website and then Instagram. And then we have a newsletter where we launch most of our new things on first. So if you go to the website, you can sign up for the newsletter and find out new things come out.
Sweet.
Amazing. Timothy, where are you?
Guys, head over to Instagram. It's at Timothy Makeups. I'm under that handle on Twitter, too. I've actually been using Twitter a little bit more than I have.
Finally.
Well, actually, I haven't used Instagram in like 6 months. So I also make some or made some YouTube videos. Easiest way you can find those is just go to the search bar and type in Timothy Makeups. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I am Crispy Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we have a Facebook page and a group you can like and join and all the things. Mm-hmm. And that's it for us.
Yay.
Panel, this was amazing. I'm so glad we actually got to do it.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it. It's lots of fun, and I'm a huge fan of what you guys are doing and promoting analog photography.
Same.
So keep it up.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
First off, Kristen, I would like to thank Pano for coming on the show. We totally, totally love what you're doing with Photogenic Supply. It was great to have you on finally, to hear your story, to get the background, to get the juice. Such a fun time. Pano, we appreciate all you've done for us, and we're so thankful for you coming on the show. This was awesome. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have a bunch of other stuff over there. Like I said before, we have the Develop and Hang night. We're just going to be rolling out Patreon-exclusive content, all kinds of fun stuff, and Patreon is the best way. It's the best way to support the show, hands down. And for the Patreons that already help support the show, guys, we do not know what we would do without you. You make this possible, and we appreciate each and every single one of you. Also wanted to throw out there, in the show notes will be a link to our holiday 4x6 print exchange. We do it every year. Feel free to sign up. It's a ton of fun. It's a great way to just, you know, share your work with the community. Again, the links will be down below. That's going to be it for this week. Guys, until next week, we will see you soon. Keep shooting. All that fun stuff. Love you guys. Later.